Broadcasting from the ESPN Radio Studios in Tallahassee, Florida, and in partnership with the JoeBucksFan.com Podcasting Network, you're locked in with the Scuttlebucks, Jeff Cameron, and Tom Lang. Tampa Bay Buccaneer Talk starts now. Here's ESPN Tallahassee's Jeff Cameron.
All right. Scuttlebucks beginning now, and the news isn't good. We'll begin with this. Obviously, the season is off the rails. Quote, I want to apologize on behalf of my teammates and Mike Evans for the incident that happened in the Saints game. That's something I can't do in the heat of the moment. My competitive nature took over. Obviously, I can't come off the field, make any gesture towards an opponent, let alone touch them. I can't do that. I apologize for that. That's Jameis Winston. Mike Evans, of course, suspended for his actions. And this is just a cluster, you know what. The season now lost. Jameis out for at least 2 weeks. I'll repeatedly say it throughout the Scuttlebucks here today. I think he's out for a lot more than that, maybe even the season. We'll see. But the question quickly switches to the draft and where we're going to find the next head coach. Because I don't believe Tom Lang that Dirk Koetter will be the head coach next year. And so let the rumors begin. It gets to be the funny season. You'll hear all kinds of names. That includes John Gruden. We'll bring in Lee DeKemper, JoeBucksFan.com, the website, of course, to talk at length about the situation in Tampa. And that's why this will be an abbreviated opener. Bucks do lose the last game, never competitive against the Saints. And now Fitzpatrick will carry the responsibility of leading this team without Mike Evans against the Jets. And really, the important questions are no longer about who's going to win what game and when, but what the Bucks are going to do as an organization.
It's something that you and I have talked about as you get the intel on a certain quarterback in Tampa Bay. But, you know, Dr. James Andrews has now been reportedly in the fold for Jameis and his shoulder.
I mentioned that a couple weeks back.
Yes, you did. That's something that they were absolutely considering for some time now. Mm-hmm. The timeline of his injury is a little bit earlier than most people consider, too. You know, I don't care what he looks like in warmups against New Orleans. And that was something that the Fox broadcast team was perpetuating.
Well, I got to get you to watch the game, man.
Correct. After the Carolina game, I thought, no. Okay, this is different. You know, there's management of an injury, and then there's an injury that you're costing your team. And it's the coach who's costing the team. It's management that's costing the team by putting Jameis Winston out there. Ryan Fitzpatrick can be awful. He can. Ryan Fitzpatrick can be average to above average.
Well, he's had some days where he looked really good. That's why he keeps getting opportunities, because you see flashes here and there. He does some things well.
What I don't understand is why Dirk Koetter, the head coach, is hurting Dirk Koetter, the offensive coordinator. You know, because if they were different people, if it was two different guys on
right.
the sideline.
You get why the head coach would desperately roll out his franchise quarterback, even compromised as he was, because he's trying to keep his job. But you don't get why the offensive coordinator would do that, knowing that he can scheme plays open that Jameis simply can't hit right now with that injury.
Correct. And again, you know, I go back to a report that Daryl Johnson and the team for Fox the week before had said, which was on Friday. They couldn't believe how many footballs hit the ground.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't believe it watching Jameis in practice on Friday. And knowing what you know, because you've told me what you know,
mm-hmm.
man, this was doomed from the start. This was going to be the outcome unless you shut him down for a period of time. Ryan Fitzpatrick was the better option this weekend, and that's not a knock on Jameis Winston's ability. It's a knock on the coaching staff, the medical staff, management, whoever, not getting in the way of him taking the field and putting the team in the best position to succeed. That's what this is all about. And if you can't get that right with a franchise quarterback, that's it. You're done, man.
Well, and he has a sprained AC joint. That's not debatable. He has that. But they think there's some damage in that shoulder, too. And so we're in a situation where I'm looking long-term at a kid that's really achieved an awful lot in a very short period of time. And he's not playing well right now. Obviously, partly, you got to blame him. If he's out on the field trying to make throws, then you got to expect him to play to a certain level. And when he doesn't, I understand that he's going to be criticized. But on the other hand, I don't choose to ignore repeatedly all of the successes that he has shown and the progress that he has made. So to me, you got to protect that investment. And he is your franchise quarterback moving forward. You're not going somewhere else. So he's shown you enough to be that. Shut it down for the rest of the year. Let's let this get right. This is a lost campaign. It's time to move on.
No, I think the crime here, again, is that Dirk has called a couple of good games back-to-back. You'd never know it because the quarterback can't execute the game plan.
When you go back and look at the All-22s, you'll see a lot of plays that are there for the making, and he just can't make the throws right now. In addition, you know, this is really short-sighted what they were doing the last couple weeks. And you'll hear people say, well, he played really well against Buffalo. Well, he did. He was the best quarterback in the league that particular Sunday in the second half, in particular against Buffalo. But when they can manage the swelling in particular, he's able to make some of those plays. But in doing that, they're finding it to be more and more difficult with each passing game
because
he
aggravates
and he lands on it and he gets hit. And it's just a real struggle. So it's not... So if he plays well for a quarter, you think, oh, well, he can keep playing well. It's not necessarily that way, especially if he's getting hit.
Yeah. Is he perfect? No, not even close yet. Well, is the deep ball still in his head before the injury? Absolutely, the deep ball's still in his head. But
he was coming out of it. You saw that sign, though.
The best, well, he hit the one to Jackson. Mm-hmm. They called back with an asinine holding call on Buffalo, yes. But, I mean, if you're not going to put the best 11 on the field, you're going to have poor practices. You're not going to handle clock management well. The defense is a sieve, and that's on you. It's gotten worse year to year because you're the head coach. I'll say it a bunch over these next few weeks unless they make a change, which point we don't have to anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, you know, we get lost in the relationship between Cutter and Jameis. He's also got responsibilities all over the organization, every phase of the game.
I think he knows, Tom, that he's done. Yeah, that press conference revealed a lot. Listen, I don't revel in a man's failures. I don't revel in the idea that a person's going to lose their job. I know he's wealthy and he's done all right for himself, but I don't like to see people lose their job. So I'm not insensitive to that unless they do something egregious or there's some sort of transgression that reveals a serious character flaw. And that's not the case with him. I mean, this is a guy that obviously is doing his best. It's gotten away from him a little bit, and I think there's going to have to be a change made. We'll bring in Joe Bucks fan Lita Kemper here in just a moment, and let's talk about big picture stuff. Here. I'll go over some of these same things with him, and we'll look at where the organization's headed.
Yeah, the one thing I'll just say is that Dirk comes off, and this could be a little bit of homerism. You know, I will grant you, because we're up in Tallahassee, covered this kid for years, and it could be that. So with that caveat, it comes off as though he believes he's being fired because Jameis let him down, and that's where I go, man, you can't even practice right. You can't even get a consistent effort out of practice. You're in week one of the season.
Which we saw that happen at
Hard
Knocks.
You saw Hard Knocks, then you have whoever it was saying, we didn't practice well all week. I guess it's okay, though, because we beat the Bears.
But I would tell you this. That is a really myopic way, if he's thinking of it that way, to look at it, because one could really seriously argue the opposite is true. The only reason he's the head coach is because Jameis Winston played so well last year. That's the only reason. He would never have been a head coach.
Yeah, so, when we won six games two years ago.
It's 2 years. Yeah. You know what I mean. Yeah, yeah. They went from 2 wins to 6 wins just like that, and the kids showed all those signs, and they wanted to keep a relationship together and all that. So, yeah, that's the only – I mean, that's it.
No, I don't take pride, you know, in saying, yeah, good, get rid of him.
No.
It's just, man –
Well, it sucks. You got to start over.
I wanted to make the playoffs. He wanted to make the playoffs. We all wanted to make the playoffs.
They went 9-7 last year, and they added talent. We thought for sure that was going to happen. That's what makes this such a profound disappointment. More on the Scuttlebucks momentarily.
Sieging the Bay, one topic at a time. The Scuttlebucks return now on JoeBucksFan.com.
It's the Scuttlebucks, brought to you by Fan Retreat. FanRetreat.com, a great Florida company, and FanRetreat.com is one-stop shop where you can purchase event tickets and travel. You can use FanRetreat.com to buy Bucks tickets, for example. And, you know, you'd have to be a really loyal fan at this point to be buying Buck tickets on the road. But if you wanted to do that, hey, bravo, that's a loyal, loyal fan. And you'd get the best deal at FanRetreat.com. Perhaps you want to go to Green Bay. It's not about the season at hand. It's about seeing Lambeau. Why don't you go do it? Go to FanRetreat.com. Joining us now, as always.
I would love to see Fitzpatrick Hundley. Come on now.
Oh,
that
what
is a
matchup.
Title
Two
fight.
QB Titans right there. Lee DeKemper, JoeBucksFan.com joins us now. Hello, Lee.
Jeff, how's it going? And you're absolutely right. You want to go to Green Bay, not so much for the Bucks, not so much for Hundley, but Lambeau, and that's, I'm going up to Green Bay. I've never been there before, and I'm really looking forward to, you know, the atmosphere, the whole ball of wax. And you want to go to Green Bay. That's supposed to be the masterpiece of NFL stadia, I should say. So go to Fan Retreat for that. Exactly.
Now, and you know, by the way, I I should note for people who do go to fanretreat.com that you can use your Joe Bucks fan discount code at fanretreat.com. So there you go. Use your Joe Bucks fan.
That's why you're the pro, Jeff.
That's what I do, baby. You know, years of broadcasting and finally paying off.
There you go.
I would say this. You know, this is a train wreck of a campaign, and they finally came off the rails officially this past weekend against New Orleans. Now there's really no reason to expect much of anything. Jameis is shutting it down. I originally reported that he was shutting it down for two to 3 weeks.
Broke it.
I'll say this. I was frankly surprised he played in the Saints game. I think that was one last Hail Mary from both Dirk Cutter, the organization, and Jameis himself to give it a go. Because had they won that game, Lee, you could make an argument. I'll grant you it would have been hanging tenuously. But, you know, that they could have a chance here over these next two games against the Jets and Dolphins to get to 5-5 at that point if you had beaten the Saints. And you'd give yourself a fighting chance to be a wild card team. Now that you're 2-6, it's over. They shut it down. Jameis is said to be out 2 weeks. I'll just tell all of our listeners here on the Scuttlebucks that it's likely going to be much longer. I'm not sure Jameis will play again this year. Let's just put it that way. We shall see. And frankly, why should he? And let's start there. There's really nothing worth risking your franchise quarterback over left to do this season.
Absolutely not. I mean, it's all about Jameis. And Dirk Cutter was hired. You can make a strong argument for only one reason, Jameis. It's all about Jameis. And right now with Jameis out, it's all about the draft. Coaches don't want to hear this. General managers don't want to hear this. Players don't want to hear this. But it's a basic fact. If you're not going to play for a playoff berth, if you're not developing a quarterback, then you're playing for the draft. And right now the Bucs are barreling to a top five pick. You know, whether it be Bradley Chubb, whether it be Saquon Barkley, you pick it. The Bucs have needs, and they're going to have a top five pick. And I'm not saying tank the season, but wins is not important. I wrote about this Sunday night on JoeBucksFan.com. Let's see Peyton Barber some more. It's pretty obvious Doug Martin's done. I've been writing that for months. Doug Martin's done. I think it's rather obvious right now after the Saints game. Doug Martin is done. Get Peyton Barber out there. Get the young guys out there. Chris Godwin. Get these young guys out there. See what they have. See if maybe they're trade bait. See if maybe you want to get rid of them. You know, get some tape on these guys. And I think one reason why coaches don't want to do that is they don't want to buttress the fact that they may not return next year.
Well, and it's a message to the fans that we're done. I mean, when you pull
intelligent fans. Well, first off, the fans pretty much know that, number one. And the intelligent fans, I think the intelligent fans are like, you know what? If you can't make the playoffs, go for the draft. I mean, that's just common sense 101 NFL. If you can't make the playoffs, and you know you're not going to make the playoffs, then go for the draft.
Well, I don't disagree. I remember at the end of Lovie Smith's career. Here in Tampa, that had he somehow vanquished the aforementioned Saints, we would have been screwed out of that number one pick. And I would have thought, well, wouldn't that just be the capper, that Lovie Smith wins a meaningless game on the final Sunday of the season so that we don't get to draft Jameis Winston? And I was so mad at that time. It's the only time that I can think of that I vehemently cheered for, or rather against, my team as the Saints were driving. I said, come on, Drew Brees, you beautiful son of a bitch, make it happen.
I got a great one for you along those lines. And I can't remember the opponent, but it was whatever year Calvin Johnson and Joe Thomas came out.
Oh, that's right.
The Bucs stunk that year. The Bucs stunk that year. And they won a meaningless – I want to say they beat Cleveland. I could be wrong. But it was a meaningless game, like the second or third last game of the season. It was meaningless. So the Bucs wound up, after a coin flip, they lost to Cleveland. They wound up picking fourth. I want to say Detroit picked first and picked Stafford. I want to say that. Could be wrong. No, I'm sorry. It was, at any rate, I can't remember who was picking first, but picking second was Detroit. And Chucky had said all along there were two players he wanted, Joe Thomas, Calvin Johnson. Detroit picked second, they got Calvin Johnson. Cleveland picked third, they got Joe Thomas. So because of that meaningless win, the Bucs lost out on two Hall of Fame players, one or the other.
And it was, by the way, you have it right, it was a meaningless victory over Cleveland. And I can remember it, too. We beat them 22-7. And that is ridiculous.
So when people say it's all about wins, even though you can't make the playoffs, I point to that. I said, that win, that meaningless win that you won't know unless you do some research, that cost you a Hall of Fame player, whether it be Joe Thomas or Calvin Johnson.
You know, Lee, that was
they got Gaines Adams, by the way. The pick the Bucs got was Gaines Adams.
Well, obviously that didn't work out. Now, having said that,
with this team.
You don't have to cut that. I don't wish the guy, my producer Tom Lang over there in cohort, is saying we're going to cut that. I'm like, we're not cutting that. It's not my fault. It didn't work out. Obviously, it didn't. Now he passed away, and rest in peace, Gaines Adams. We're not saying that, but you know, I mean,
he passed when he was with a member of another team.
Another team, right? So that's what we're saying here. I don't think. Anyhow, listen, I think it's self-explanatory. Nobody's rooting for Gaines Adams to die. It didn't work out.
No.
It did work out, obviously, for Joe Thomas going to Cleveland. Well, not really, but it did work out. Thomas right. Well, all right, so back to the point here. I think you're right. Mm-hmm. Intelligent fans think whatever the draft best draft pick possibility is what you now want. And what's hard is that you juxtapose that to the fact that you tell people to go out and play hard. It's competition. You try to win football games. And yet, as a fan, you know, you root for your team. But in all honesty, now it's almost like you don't want the Bucs to win another game.
Because yeah, unfortunately.
It's hard to say that.
Position. You never want to root for your opponent, but you know it's in the long run, that's the best scenario.
All right, so now we've got an interesting situation. By all rights here, it looks like that this is a rudderless team and organization currently, and here's why I say that. This might be a tough question for you, Lee, but let me throw this out there. You know, I this is not a referendum. This question is not a referendum on Jason Light, who I think has done some good things. He's had some misses, but that's all GMs, okay?
Yes.
All right. If he had a multi-year deal, my question to you is, if he wasn't sort of in a lame duck position with no contract after this season, do you believe that the Glazers would have already asked him to fire Dirk Koetter?
The Glazers? I would say yes, because I know the Glazers' trigger finger. I would say yes, the Glazers would probably have asked him to do that. And I'm fortunate enough that I've got a good relationship with Jason. And I'm sure all general managers are like this. I remember Jeremy Foley, the athletic director at the University of Florida, had said this. And, you know, honestly, NFL GMs are what athletic directors are in large colleges, large universities. They have a list of coaches in their top drawer that, if need be, they pull out that list. And I know Jason has a lot of coaches. I'm not saying he was ever, ever, ever looking to get rid of Dirk. He likes Dirk. They're tied at the hip in many ways. But I know just in casual conversation with Jason, you know, he'll bring up a guy's name and just rave about what a great coach he is. He'll bring up another guy's name and just rave about what a great coach he was and is. He was a big Bill O'Brien fan when he was with Arizona, and he strongly pushed for Bidwell to try to hire Bill O'Brien. Bill O'Brien decided to stay at Penn State. There's other examples. Arians was a guy that Light liked a lot, and obviously the Cardinals hired him. So there's I know Jason admires quite a few coaches that are either head coaches, ex-head coaches, or coordinators that, you know, if need be, he would pull the trigger and hire this guy. Now, the Jameis issue, and like I said, you called it long ago, and there were rumors bubbling beneath the surface of James Andrews being involved. This changes things, I believe, for Koetter. So let's say the Bucks completely go off the map and do get that top five pick. You know, Koetter could tell the Glazers, what do you expect me to do? The franchise quarterback was hurt. So I think that really changes things a lot.
Okay, so here's the other thing about that, by the way, and this is where
I'm not saying Dirk did a good job this year.
No, I know.
Dirk always says, you know, blame me. So, well, you know, I love Dirk to death, but they've not gotten the job done.
Let's just do this, Lee. I'll say this, and I've been saying it, and I'm ready for Dirk to go, and I think I was ready for Dirk to go before the season started. I may have laid hints that way in the first episode we ever did of the Scuttlebucks. I was not all in on Dirk. Now, here's the thing. I actually think Dirk Koetter's a fine play caller. I actually do. He schemed up plenty of open things over the last few weeks that Jameis simply couldn't hit because of this injury, and DeSean Jackson right now should have 4 or 5 big touchdowns down the field. I got it. That's not on Dirk. There are lots of things that aren't on Dirk as a play caller. But as far as being a leader and a head coach, and a CEO, he is struggling mightily because he lost that locker room, and I dare say he lost that locker room before the season began when they were having empty practices, which we saw on tape during Hard Knocks, where he was disappointed with their effort in practice. Well, that's just blatant disrespect for the head coach if players are going to go out there and half-ass at practice. And all you got to do if you want to see an organization flip culture and get the most out of young talent is look across the country at a guy that's 32 years old in his first ever head coaching job. And I know everybody will talk about McVay right now as the talk of the town, as they should, but Jared Goff, a young quarterback who they got nothing out of a year ago, looked already like a bust, is now throwing for 400 yards a game. They're 6-2. The Rams look like a team that's going to be around for the playoff run. Sean McVay has done an amazing job and catered that offense to Gurley and Goff and those receivers. People are looking at the Bucs personnel and the young talent at quarterback and the talent at wide receiver, and they're saying that could be us if we had the right guy. So that push to get rid of Dirk Koetter is going to grow louder and louder and louder. I don't think he makes it. If he makes it through the season, that might... You know, maybe it's just because they can't do anything right now because the GM is not in a position of authority without a multi-year deal. So there's a lot of changes coming, and that leads me to my next question to you. Mm-hmm. Everybody in Tampa, whether they agree with it or not, knows the Gruden rumor is coming.
And it's already out there.
Okay, well, in some circles, right. It is already out there. Do you think there would ever be anything of substance to that?
I am of the belief. Now, Ira Kaufman, who also writes for JoeBuckFan.com, he's a columnist. He's tight with Gruden. Ira thinks that when Gruden's youngest son graduates high school, he'll be ready to come back. Now, if Gruden has eyes on the Bucs job, you know, you're not going to get a better deal in the sense that he doesn't have to move. He's already been here. There won't be a smoother transition for Gruden to take over a new NFL team that would be the Bucs. My issue is, and I wrote about this earlier on JoeBuckFan.com, allegedly, Gruden's getting paid $6.5 million with ESPN. That's about what an NFL head coach gets paid. What does Gruden work? Let's be liberal here and say he works 60 days a week. Let's 60 days a week. You know, he's not working 16-hour days, by mind you. 60 days a year, he's getting paid $6.5 million as opposed to putting in 90-hour work week.
Yeah, but here's
the same.
But here's the thing, though, and you're right. Because you're looking at this as a rational human being who likes a normal workload.
And he's not rational. You're right.
That's right. You're talking about a guy whose life is coaching, whose whole life is football. He has a freaking current playbook that he updates throughout the season when he watches plays from other teams that he thoroughly enjoys and then comments on. What kind of guy who hasn't coached in years is carrying around an active playbook to write down?
A whack job.
That's right. A whack job who loves the hell out of football and, as we saw during Hard Knocks, was drooling over the idea of having Jameis Winston to mold. So you're right. You or me, you tell me, hey, Lee, Jeff, we're going to give you a few million dollars to work about a total of 2 months out of 12 during the year. What do you say you take that job or work your ass off 20 hours a day, every day, year round to try to keep a franchise afloat where you get all the blame if things go wrong?
Job security.
That's right. We're going to take the former, not the latter. But not
well,
that.
Well, here's another caveat to all that, and it is still with ESPN. Variety, which I know you're aware of, it's a trade magazine for the entertainment industry, and television is entertainment. Apparently, last week, the guy that always writes about ESPN, Steve Miller, I think his name is, Miller, he's got some kind of inside there with ESPN. Apparently, ESPN it's out there now that they may not pick up the NFL after their current contract with the NFL expires after the 2021 season. They're already reworking contract language with carriers, whether it be cable, whether it be satellite companies, that does not include guarantees of NFL game broadcast content. So if you're Gruden, you know, when that job expires, that expires. That's not going to come open again. If you're Gruden, do you think, you know what, I'll stick with ESPN for 3 more years and pocket that $6.5 million while it's there and squeeze that lemon dry. Then when my job expires, then I'll come back to coaching.
I think if it's the job, what grade is this kid in?
I want to say a junior or a senior. I don't know that for a fact. I will ask Ira that, but I don't know off the top of my head. I know he's in high school, and Ira taught. You know, like I said, Ira knows Chucky. He knows his wife. He knows the family, and Ira's pretty adamant that Chucky will start getting serious about coaching jobs when his son graduates. But again, the Bucs job, he can still follow his son. I mean, Dirk Cutter's son played as a quarterback for Berkeley Prep in Tampa. So it's not like Gruden will never get to see his kid play football or anything. It's not like he won't come home after a game or after a day's work, another 18-hour day, breaking down film, et cetera, not see his kid. He's coming home to his kid.
Well, Gruden is currently 54 years old, but three full seasons around, plus he'd be 58, actually, by the time that next season rolled around. That he,
that's if, Vermeil territory.
If he, yeah, I don't, you know, that's, that's a toughie.
There's pros and cons to both of it. There really is.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I think, listen, you're right. It would have to be a unique situation, but Tampa is a unique situation, and you get the sense that he wishes he had never been forced out, that he likes Tampa, that he wants to see that organization do well. He's I mean, obviously, the organization, and looking back on this in hindsight, might have changed their mind if they knew what was coming after they let John Gruden go. So it's an interesting, did his relationship with the Glazers remain good?
No, they were, well, I don't think the Glazers ever had any ill will toward him, but Chucky, for the longest time, was very, very bitter at the Glazers. Matter of fact, he was at a speaking engagement in Ocala 3-4 years ago, and he referred to one of the Glazers, I don't know which one, he referred to one of the Glazers as an SOB, but he didn't say SOB. He said the full word. So there was some real bitterness on Chucky's part. Very bitter for a while there, but it seems like they patched things up. Obviously, they put his name in the Ring of Honor.
Sure,
he came in and spoke glowingly about the chance he got from the Glazer family.
Well, so also,
I think things have patched up.
Yeah, time has a way of doing that for everybody. But
and
also,
I also heard this from a very, very reliable source. I'm not going to out his name at all, but this guy would know. This guy would know, and he said it was his opinion, not opinion. It was his information that before the Bucks hired Lovey, they reached out to Gruden to gauge interest, and Chucky was not interested.
Well, he might be now. Who knows? Would Gruden demand?
Yeah, time's changed.
Would Gruden demand personnel decisions?
I'm guessing yes. I mean, if they want you, why wouldn't you try to squeeze power as you could?
Yeah, I wouldn't. And I wouldn't issue, give it to him though.
No, I would not. The issue, the reason why, and this is a fairly common knowledge. The reason why the Glazers fired Chucky is for years they begged him to draft
young
quarterback.
Yeah.
He wouldn't do it, and finally they said, that's it, enough. And so I'm whoever hires Gruden, you know, I always thought Daniel Snyder or Jerry Jones would hire him because I always figured, number one, had to be a very powerful owner. That'd be number one. Number two, you couldn't give him control of personnel. Look at his draft picks. Oh, my God.
Right.
People rag on Jason Light. My gosh, Jason Light looks like Ted Thompson. Compared to Chucky's draft.
No. That's why I said it. That's why I brought it up. I would never give him that, and I really wouldn't give any coach that, for that matter, but that's an aside. What I would tell you is that that I would offer it to John Gruden if I could gauge the level of passion and investment, you know, not only, obviously, of time, which you know he's going to give it, but I'd want to know where his head was at. Is he in the right mindset? Is he ready to give it one last go, pour his heart and soul into this thing for the next 5 to 10 years, and let's see where it goes? Then maybe I'd offer it to him. Hey, brother, we got to get going. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. Way to get caught up. We'll talk to you soon, Lee.
Hey, thanks a lot, Jeff. I appreciate it. Have a good one.
All right, you too. Lee DeKemper, JoeBucksFan.com. You guys know that. We're all on here at the Scuttle Bucks with the JoeBucksFan.com podcast network, if you will. Interesting times, man.
There's a lot to chew on there.
Let's come back and do that. That's next on the Scuttle Bucks.
Avast ye scuttlebucks.
So a lot to react to there from Lee DeKemper, JoeBucksFan.com, excuse me. As we wrap up the Scuttlebucks. So let's visit that. Let's start with what we were talking there at the end, Tom. About John Gruden, who's 54 years old. And I always thought, well, first of all, for the record, Tom and myself, even though we didn't really actively talk about this at the time, were not in favor of John Gruden being let go when he was. He had just finished a winning season and, of course, brought the franchise their only Super Bowl. I know a lot of people like to credit Tony Dungy, who does deserve some credit. Gruden, I felt like, never got the credit he deserved because of Tony Dungy's successes previous. To be sure, they would not have won that Super Bowl with Tony Dungy there. At least not that as quickly as they did. John Gruden came in, overhauled the offense, and motivated this team in a way that Dungy was no longer doing, and his reticence to hire a legitimate offensive coordinator and open up the game plan was going to be a problem for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, you think we go into the vet in the NFC title game and win that game?
The answer
is
no.
There in the vet?
No. So we both like John Gruden. Listen, I get it if you don't want John Gruden. I'm not saying that's got to be the guy. Let's put the push on for John Gruden. May not work out. He's been away from the game for some time now. It's not that he doesn't have the acumen for it. Clearly he does. I think the one great thing he brings to the table as a Monday night analyst is his acumen for the game, his knowledge of what's coming formationally and otherwise and why they're attempting to do that. He's very, very quick. Now, he's fallen into shtick a little bit, and that can be annoying. But that has nothing to do with him as a head coach. And so his knowledge and staying in tune with the game and being in that booth year in and year out, I think does enable him to see current trends, recognize the direction of the sport, things that you would have to do that are different from when he last coached with Tampa Bay back in 2009. So that would be something. And so he's a candidate. The point is we're talking about coaching changes. And I think now, Tom, my opinion, and maybe Lee doesn't feel this way, or maybe he's just a little reticent to say it because he's got to go to One Buck Place every day. I don't. Is that this is inevitable. They're not going to make it like this. That locker room is checked out. I think it's fairly obvious. Some players have hinted as much. And when you see the fracas on the sideline where Evans is now suspended and Jameis is poking the head, all of that stuff, those are indicators that this thing is run amok. We've got a problem on our hands. And Jameis should be embarrassed for that. Evans should be suspended, and he was. That's ridiculous. In addition to the losses now, this is an absolute nightmare. So changes, sweeping changes, I do believe are necessary.
Jameis should be embarrassed for what he did and the role he played as instigator, at least from a physical contact standpoint. Trash talk is trash talk, and it happens every week in the NFL. No, we dish out plenty of it ourselves. But Evans, the Evans thing is interesting to me because he should be suspended, but he was also right. I get it.
So you mean as a teammate?
Running down somebody from behind. You want to talk about that, fine. Yeah. But listen, the guy shoved a quarterback, you go down. If an offensive lineman does that, nobody's got a problem with it.
No, listen. Okay, as a teammate protecting your quarterback who was in the wrong to begin with, you're right. You have to do it. It's not about right or wrong at that point. He's your teammate. He's the franchise. You got to protect him. I just hate that Jameis did that, and then I hate that Evans had to do what he did, although he didn't have to do exactly what he did. Run over there, tackle a guy. You don't go to the back of the head. You don't get a sprinting start. You could have really hurt him. Just the whole thing speaks to a lack of respect for the guy that's leading the program.
Well, it's a lack of presence from the guy who's leading the program.
He's sitting there staring at his playbook.
Right, he's worrying about the punt block or whatever. Okay, I didn't see it. So you want a day to collect your thoughts before you find out the right thing to say. The truth is, way the NFL is with tablets and
reviews,
he could
see it easily,
he could have figured everything out by the end of the quarter or halftime or whatever it is, and then he'd be prepared to make a statement. That was him stalling. He wanted to see how it was going to play.
Which is fine. I mean, I would stall too in that situation.
Sure. Well, coaches do that all the time. Yeah, sure. I didn't see that. BS. Yeah, you saw it.
You saw it, yeah.
You're in command of everything. If you didn't, all the more reason you should be fired.
Well, and maybe that too.
Yeah.
Could very well be.
You mismanaged the Jameis situation, as we talked about in the first segment, but you mismanaged the Jameis situation to that point. You got to go, man. It's not about play calling anymore, which, he can be good, he can be bad, and he can be really, really good at times, too.
He can be really, really bad at times, too.
But you got clock management issues all season long.
It just starts with the fact that he doesn't have their undivided attention and respect. He doesn't, and he may be a great guy and a very good play caller somewhere else. He's going to have to go find out. It's not happening here. I'm not attacking him as a person. It's over in Tampa. So we're just, I don't think this is really an arguable point at this point. Lee just mentioned, well, now he can go to the Glazers and say, what did you want from me? My franchise quarterback was hurt. Man, your franchise quarterback checked out on you prior to that, and the team, more importantly, did. So remove Jameis from the talking point and go to the team.
No, if you were smart, you would have played that card weeks ago.
Yes.
You wouldn't have let this whole thing play out.
I would have.
The doctors will clear him. He'll be good to go. That's the dumbass move of the year for Dirk.
And I brought that up when it happened. It was undercutting your franchise quarterback. You made him look bad, and you knew he was hurt. There was no reason to do that unless you were being selfish and or you didn't have the foresight to realize what that looks like. Either way, that's a damning thing to have had happen, and it did, and I was done pretty much right there.
You're presiding over a ship that has the most talent across the board in the last 3 years for this franchise, and your defense can't get a stop. That's on you because you're the head coach. Again, I think what happens here, because Dirk and Jameis are kind of tied together and that relationship is, you know, the heartbeat, well, which is dead now, but it was the heartbeat of what the franchise is all about. It's why he was brought on as the head coach, why he was, you know, promoted, naturalized into that role. Sometimes we get lost in that relationship of play calling and execution, and we don't see he's the head coach. He's got to manage all facets of the game.
Right.
He's got to make sure we're playing up to our ability, we're practicing well, that in situations we don't look like a-holes because we're making poor decisions on whether to go for two or whether to kick or go for it on fourth down. I mean, all of the big picture issues, you can call into question, and there are several examples as to why you can call into question where the head coach is at.
You know, it's interesting. I think it's the hardest thing for football minds, guys that have been coordinators, guys that are defensive coordinators or offensive coordinators that get elevated to head coach. It is the hardest thing for them to understand. And I'm not saying intellectually they struggle with it. But, you know, to sit there and in theory know that this is the way of the world and that you are now hired for a different job entirely as opposed to just calling plays, you can know that, but then actually engaging in that role, taking that big step backwards and seeing the entire picture is very difficult. You know, we both cover Florida State when we're not doing the Scuttlebucks, and we're watching a head coach here in Jimbo Fisher, who's the play caller and was a offensive coordinator for Nick Saban at LSU and has been a play caller for a long time, have real trouble with that currently. He's really struggling to be the CEO necessary, that role as a head coach, taking that step back, handing over the reins to another man and allowing him to do the things that you've always done and loved to do. Is very difficult for some people, but it does allow you at that point to see the big picture clearly and to demand of those people and players fully while investing in them as individuals because you're not worried about calling the next play. You can go over and calm your quarterback down. You can talk to your defense. You can big picture this thing. I just think it's very difficult sometimes for these guys to do that.
Well, I think it depends on your age, too. You know, McVay is a younger guy, and he goes and sits on a water cooler. He's worried about the next drive because he knows Wade Phillips. It's an interesting dynamic they
have out there. They got a superstar, by the way. They got a superstar when they hired him.
Yes.
We didn't know it, but they did.
But you have an older guy in Wade Phillips running the defense, so the dynamics there are great. So you have an old, wise defensive coordinator. You have a young, up-and-coming head coach who's your offensive play caller. But, you know, try and do that if you're McVay at 50 years old.
Right.
And that'll be a discussion if, and it's a big Gruden if.
Gruden comes back.
Is he really going to call all the plays? Like, what kind of system is he going to run? And I'm not talking about offensive play calling and formations. I'm talking about what does his hierarchy look like?
No,
what
you
are
know,
the responsibilities
by the way,
like?
This is why it's not a slam dunk, even if he wanted to come back. I'm saying this would be something you have to sit down with. But here's our other problem. The person that has to sit down with him is the GM. And who the hell is that going to be? It may not be Jason Light. It may be. But right now, he's just drifting in the, you know, out in sea. I mean, we got nothing here to know that he's going to be back. I firmly believe that if the Glazers had extended him, he would have been asked by now to fire Dirk Cutter because they are, as I said, rudderless.
No, it seemed in that postgame presser on Sunday that Dirk kind of knew the drill. And then, you know, if you're Mike Smith today talking and somebody asks you, are your players giving effort? First of all, that question that comes up at all is a slap in the professional face.
By the way, if they were always giving effort,
yeah,
and you were asked that question, it would be your opportunity to light into a reporter.
Correct.
But he couldn't.
His answer was not consistently enough.
It's as damning as anything we've heard.
He should have said, fire me, you know? Fire me, because I can't reach these guys. And listen, sometimes it's not the coach's problem. Sometimes the players shut down on the coach. There's a little bit of that, too.
Well, it can happen in professional football big time because these guys are grown-ass men, in many cases, making a lot more than the coach.
Right. Yeah.
But
the thing is, if the relationship doesn't work, there have to be changes. It's just, if I can't reach you, if I can't motivate you, and I'm a second-grade teacher, well, guess what? You got to fire my ass because I'm not putting kids in position to get to third grade here. And what sucks is last year, man, the patchwork job that Mike Smith did to get us into that home stretch with a chance to make the playoffs was unbelievable. And he's well-respected. He's accomplished. But he's just – sometimes things don't work in certain places. Belichick didn't work in Cleveland, you know? And I'm not saying that – this might be crazy. I think you roll your eyes. But I'm not saying that Dirk can't be a good head coach at some point. This is his first gig, and he has a lot to learn. If he takes, you know, if he takes copious notes about what's gone on these last 2 months, 3 months, and how it all fell apart, well, then maybe he can learn and get a second shot at it someday somewhere else. But right now, man, this has just been a colossal failure of motivation, execution, and player management.
And now we head inextricably to towards the draft top five. That's just, there's no getting around.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where they're going
to
go.
Listen, man, you know, in the last week, it, actually, as soon as we lost to the Saints, you know what I did? I went and I checked our old friend and his mock drafts, and I said, all right, so who are the best edge rushers in the draft?
Well,
it's Arden Key at LSU, and it's, you know, Chubb from NC State. And I don't know about him. We'll see, because he might be a front-runner type. But I want to find out. Now I'm looking into these guys, and I'm looking. If LSU's on TV, what does Arden Key look like? And does he translate to Sundays?
We're in the process as fans and people that cover or follow or root for this team, and we're all of those, of watching position by position on Saturday the guys that could come in and help this football team, because we are going to have a nice draft choice, a position to be in that you don't like to be in, but once you're in, you take serious and you say, all right, well, a lot of good players out there. We can get better again.
Yeah, after the game was over, I was texting with my buddies, and I said, man, I'd love to be a fly on the wall in one buck. And one of them said, why? Lights off? I said, no, the Glazers. Because now they got to decide if the front office is going to remain largely the same, if the coaching staff is making changes. I mean, it may depend on who they hire. Maybe somebody they hire wants to be a personnel guy as well.
Well, they might need a president.
But these phone calls, it's like you said, man, up here in Tallahassee, the phone calls that Jimbo's making around the college football coaching networks must be very interesting, and the names must be very interesting.
I'd love to hear them.
But I'd love to hear who the Glazers are picking up their cell phone and calling right now.
They've got to enable somebody, though, because either they're making the decision and firing Jason Light, firing Dirk Cutter, and they'll be at the podium making, you know, having that press conference.
Yeah, or new GM, yeah.
Right, or they're going to hire somebody else, and then that person's going to hire their GM, and then they'll decide together, along with the Glazers, as to who the coach is going
to
be.
That's the other thing. And, you know, to me, we're all talking about Gruden because that's, you know, just
that's the first name that's
play.
Come up, yeah.
Yeah, and he's an offensive guy. He loves Jameis. I mean, that gif of him. I mean, you saw the clip.
Yeah.
It's a little uncomfortable.
He loves him.
When he's in the blue polo,
it's very weird.
He's like, he's got his arms wrapped up, and he's biting his lip. I mean, he's biting his lip. And he's nodding like,
you.
Talk to me more, Jameis.
Tell me more about routes.
Right.
Yeah.
But you may need somebody like a team president to make all of these decisions if you're the Glazers. Somebody like, I don't know, a Rich McKay, if he would be invested.
I don't think we're getting the band back together again across the board.
Well, I'm not saying McKay, Gruden, they didn't like each other very much.
Know.
But
yeah.
I mean, I would place a call to him. You tired of Arthur Blank? You want to come down here and help us?
It's hard to get tired of Arthur Blank.
He seems like a good guy.
Well, also
for a billionaire.
And everybody says that it's really enjoyable to work for him. So I don't think he's going anywhere.
Yeah, well, they all have skeletons in their closet.
Well of course.
At that pay grade.
If you're a billionaire, of course. Mm. Yes. Somebody had to die for you to become a billionaire.
Nations.
Typically. We kind of kid. Come on, hang in there. We'll talk to you next time on the Scuttlebucks after the next loss against the Jets.
The Jets, yeah, there's a Jets game, right?
Yeah, we're going to lose that game. Maybe not. Maybe Fitz will go win it. Here, just do me a favor if you're a listener of the Scuttlebucks, and do yourself a favor. Don't be the dumbass that watches the backup quarterback play well a few times the remainder of the year and we ignore the entirety of his lackluster career and pipe up that he's better than your franchise quarterback, because he's not, and he never has been, and he won't be. I don't care if he throws for 500 yards and 4 touchdowns. That's an individual game, and that'd be great, and I'd root for it to happen. That'd be neat, but it ain't happening.
One quick thing before we go. I was just looking at the JoeBucksFan.com message boards, you know, and those get quite colorful. The dog whistles are back out, by the way.
Oh, well, they're everywhere.
Failing, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But there was one post that I thought encapsulated, I think, kind of where we stand, and it's a good post. It's by this guy named Lord Cornelius.
Lord.
Yeah. Pretty depressing times. In the end, Jameis is coming off 2 bad performances while injured. In the end, he is a 23-year-old quarterback who has set a variety of franchise records and seems to want to win more than any other player on the team. Focusing on 2 bad performances while he was hurt versus his entire career seems a little reckless. The people on here acting like he hadn't shown any signs of improvement or is as bad as those games indicated are focusing on the worst and not seeing the big picture. His accuracy percentage is actually up even with the bad performances. This is the best part. I was pretty drunk for this game and spent a while pretty hungover after it. But I will say it was a great trip to New Orleans, at least. And I met a ton of really good Bucks fans. I honestly don't know what the F to think anymore. This is the most shocking season I can ever remember personally. And in terms of expectations going into it and what ended up happening, I say God help us all and go Bucks.
I think it's pretty simple. You're leaderless right now, so... You know, make some changes. You got talent. Get Jameis healthy. Let's go from there.
There is no doubt that this is the most shocking season ever in my lifetime as a Bucks fan, given what the expectations were and what you see on a week-to-week basis, as bad as that defense can play at times, as out of sorts the offense can look at times, what the offensive line has been. It looked like he was going to be good for a couple of weeks, and now it's a detriment. I mean, a big-time detriment.
So I'm really old, and I'll tell you the most shocking season was way back when the Bucks went from dead-ass last to first. I saw it. We'll talk to you next time on the Scuttlebox, and hopefully, I don't know, we got good news. I don't know what that'd be, but I hope so. For Tom Wang, I'm Jeff. Thanks for listening.